Well, welcome to our study of Numbers. We're going to begin chapter 30. And this chapter documents the law concerning vows. Verse 1. And Moses spoke unto the heads of the tribe concerning the children of Israel, saying, This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded.
So, pretty explanatory. You go to the leadership, he goes to the head of the tribes, and he tells them what the Lord has said regarding the vows that the Israelites are to make, and then obviously it's up to the leaders to pass it on down and to enforce those things, okay?
If a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word, he shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth.
And this seems to be a lost art these days. When you vow a vow to the Lord, or when you take an oath that binds you to some agreement, when I say take an oath, when you give someone your word, then you are obligated to keep your word, regardless of what that is. It's not, well, something came up. No, your word is your bond, as my dad used to say. Your word's your bond. You give your word, you keep your word to everybody. You do it with your kids. You do it with your associates at work or church or whatever. You keep your word. I'm telling you, over the years, I'd like to have a dollar for every minute that I've waited on people that said, I will be there at such and such a time. Now, that may seem insignificant to you, but here's what it tells me. You're not a person of your word. And so if I can't trust you to keep your word in an appointment, how could I trust you with my life or with something else? And so it's extremely important that we be people of our word. You understand? If I told one of my kids, if you do that, this is going to happen, then take it to the bank. They don't have to question whether it's going to happen. But I've heard parents threaten, if you do that again, I'm going to do this. If you do that again, I'm going to do this. And I'm sitting there saying, won't you shut up? Because you're not going to back up your word, and that kid knows you're not going to back up your word. Well, it's the same way with Christians out in the public. There's an old adage that says, I can't hear what you're saying for seeing what you are. And we have to be people of our word. We have to keep our word. Even if it hurts you, you keep your word. You understand? There again, I've heard it all my life. You give your word to your own hurt. Don't say something you won't back up. If you tell someone you're going to buy something, then you're obligated to buy it. There was no condition on that. You understand? And so we need to be cautious with our words. And just understand this, God's listening. By your words you're justified. By your words you're condemned. Aren't you glad God keeps His word? What if He said, well, now that you've messed up, I'll just write you off. That's not the way it works. And that's not the way we're to work. But yet that's what happens. You see a person mess up, a person trip and fall, and Christians will write them off. They want to disassociate with that person when they need a situation in their life, they need help. They don't need someone to stomp them while they're down. They need someone to help them get back up. You understand? We're establishing a reputation among people, whether we realize it or not. Is he good for his word? I think I've told you I was in a certain country. I won't mention the country. I'll just say this. A guy would tell me that he would pick me up at a certain time. He was supposed to pick me up at 2:00. So I go down in the hotel lobby. I'm waiting for him. I get down there early. And right before 6, he's still not there. And the lady behind the desk came over to me. She said, "Are you waiting for someone? Is someone supposed to pick you up?" And I said, "Yes." And she asked me who, and he never keeps his word. You can't depend on him. And this guy's the leader. You understand? And so what do you think people think of his organization? I wouldn't want any part of that. If he can't keep his word in the little thing, he won't keep his word in the big thing. You make a vow, you keep the vow. You understand? When you agree with someone, then you agree with someone. I've said enough, I guess, on that. But that's a sore spot with me because I have been violated so many times.
I'll add to that. Pete is a very good encourager for me about this. We were in a situation not too long ago, and we were right in the middle of something, just right in the thick of working. And I was supposed to meet Smith at a certain time, and I thought, well, I better call Smith and tell him I'm going to be a few minutes late. And I said that out loud, and he said, "No, you keep your word." And here's what I've noticed about that. Well, number one, it just establishes the trust for the relationship. The other thing that I'm learning the older I get is the importance of keeping my word to myself. How many of us have said, "Okay, Lord, I'm going to do this," and it might just be something dealing with the natural man. I'm going to go exercise such and such day. And then it gets that day, and, I'm not going to do that. Well, we didn't keep our word to ourselves. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is what I've seen is for people that have a difficult time keeping their word, they have a difficult time believing the word of God, that God will keep his word, that God will actually be the healer. Jesus is the healer. They have a hard time with that. And so this whole notion of being true to your word, when you say you're going to do something, doing it, when you tell a person, even if you tell yourself, be true to your word, because we have a tendency, just a natural tendency, to place whatever characteristics we're carrying onto God. And that's what we're doing, is we can impact our spiritual eternal lives without even realizing it. Our words truly matter. You know, the Word of God teaches us that there's power in the tongue. There's life and death in the power of the tongue. And so if what we say is so powerful that it can bring about life or death, how do you think that correlates to keeping a vow? You know, I consider my commitment to Jesus to be a covenant vow. I said out loud to him, "I submit myself to you. I lay down my life to you." Now, I've said that word. Am I going to keep it? Or am I going to break that vow? Just something to think about. We can be very, very flippant with our words and do a great deal of damage to others and do a great deal of damage to ourselves. And what Pete was speaking about before as far as reputation is concerned, I want you to think about, because everybody can probably think of at least a handful of people. That person never keeps their word. I can't trust them. They say they're going to do this. Yeah, whatever. We shouldn't be those people. Verse 3. Now, before I even read this, I want to just to say, let's take a look at this from the perspective of protection. If a woman also vow a vow unto the Lord, and bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and her father hear her vow, and her bond wherewith she hath bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she hath bound her soul shall stand. But if her father disallow her in the day that he heareth, not any of her vows, nor of her bonds wherewith she hath bound her soul, shall stand. And the Lord shall forgive her, because her father disallowed her.
Now this shows you authority, is the way it's set up. And you have to understand the depth of this. This is not something just superficial. And here again, I'm not picking on a gender. It's just there's facts. Generally, women will make emotional decisions quicker than a man will, and they may make a irrational decision because at the moment it sounds good. That's why salesmen prey on women. All that, you telemarket and all that, because they feel like they can lead them. And so here, a woman was, if she was unmarried in her father's house, her father had authority over her. So if she makes a vow, and her father hears that, and thinks that was foolish, then he has the authority to say that vow's not standing. And when he does that, it releases her from that vow. Or even if she would make a legitimate vow, and he says, no, that vow will not stand, then she's released from that vow as well. Now it's on the father's back, not on hers. Okay? And so, as Heather mentioned earlier, there's a protection in this. And so the father could override the vow of that daughter who lived at home. Okay? Now, he would do that to protect her, is what it is all about. Okay.
Verse 6. And if she had at all a husband when she vowed, or uttered aught out of her lips wherewith she bound her soul, and her husband heard it, and held his peace at her in the day that he heard it, then her vows shall stand, and her bonds wherewith she bound her soul shall stand. But if her husband disallowed her on the day that he heard it, then he shall make her vow which she vowed, that which she uttered with her lips wherewith she bound her soul, of none effect, and the Lord shall forgive her.
And so here again is an authority issue. If a wife makes a vow, and her husband hears that vow, and it's not in agreement with him, then he has the authority to say that vow will not stand. And I'm talking about legal authority. I'm talking about something that would hold up in a court of law. Okay? Whether she's irrational or not, he still has the authority to void that vow, because he has authority over her. Now here again, he is to be her protector. That's one of the roles of a husband. He is to protect that wife. And so if he's doing right, in reality, if he nullified a vow, it would be to protect her. Okay? We're not talking about dictatorial type stuff. We're talking about really living up to your responsibility and protecting the one that you're supposed to be protecting, okay? children or wife.
You know, I think about a situation that happened to me years ago with a car. My minivan was having issues, and I took it to the mechanic. He said, that's going to be, you need such and such. I'd never heard of it. It's going to be over $900 to get that fixed. You need it fixed now. I came home, and I heard, absolutely not. That is not the case. Somebody else took it up there. It costs about $35 to get whatever the issue fixed. And so, like it or not, we can look at this, ladies, and we can get our feathers ruffled and say, well, what I say is just as important. Or we can say, thank you, Lord, that you built a protection for us, because oftentimes we're more vulnerable to attack. And so we need some protection.
So this is where parents are failing with the children. This is why the children are so in such a mess today. Over the board. I mean, you've in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this. I wouldn't have dreamed it, because the parents are not parents anymore. You know, it doesn't take anything to you know, you don't have to be a mental giant to have a baby. You understand? You can be irresponsible and have babies or father babies or whatever. But then what are you going to do after the birth? Now that's a responsibility to protect that child. You can't let a child make decisions on its own. You can't let a teenager make decisions on their own. They're not mature enough. You understand? They're going to do things off of fun or what they think will feel good or whatever. And consequently, they're going to make bad decisions. And so if a parent really loves that child, they're going to stand up to the plate and say, no. I don't care what you've said or who you've said it to. That's not going to happen. You understand? You love the child? Protect the child. You love the wife? Protect the wife. You understand? Stand up and take responsibility. And then the other side of this is think about it before you make a vow.
Yeah, good.
Would my father be in agreement with this? Or would my husband be in agreement with this? Then I need to refer. That's a big word, and it's a safe word. Mm-hmm. When in doubt, refer. If you don't think he would be in agreement, then talk to him first. And then don't usurp the authority, because it's going to come back and haunt you anyway.
That's good. Now, verse 9 deals with the widow or the divorced woman. But every vow of a widow and of her that is divorced, wherewith they have bound their souls, shall stand against her.
So that divorced woman does not have an authority over her. Her father, she's left home, he's not an authority. Her husband, they're separated, so she doesn't have an authority over. So when she makes a vow, she's obligated to that vow. There's no one to annul it. Okay?
And is she vowed in her husband's house, or bound her soul by a bond with an oath, and her husband heard it, and held his peace at her, and disallowed her not, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she bound her soul shall stand. But if her husband hath utterly made them void on the day he heard it, then whatsoever proceedeth out of her lips concerning her vows, or concerning the bond of her soul, shall not stand. Her husband hath made them void, and the Lord shall forgive her. Every vow and every binding oath to afflict the soul, her husband may establish it, or her husband may make it void. But if her husband altogether hold his peace at her from day to day, then he established all her vows, or all her bonds which are upon her. He confirmed them because he held his peace at her in the day that he heard them.
So he's given more detail here. So when a husband hears an oath by his wife gives, or even a father, they hear an oath of a daughter and they don't say anything. By not saying anything, they're confirming that vow, that oath. And so then that person is obligated to keep that. And so they can annul it or they can confirm it by saying, no, you don't. Or if you don't say anything, then they're obligated to keep the vow.
All right, let me move on to verse 16. These are the statutes which the Lord commanded Moses between a man and his wife, between the father and his daughter, being yet in her youth in her father's house.
Now, it's important that we emphasize God gave these instructions to Moses. Moses didn't come up with this. It didn't go before some perverted Congress or something like that. This was what God handed down, and he said, this is the way it is. Now, Moses' responsibility is to get that message out to the leaders, and it's the leaders' responsibility to get that out to the people, to where that nation is following the word of God. There's a chain of command in all that, you understand? But evidently, that's a pretty important law, and evidently, there was a problem. If there's no problem, why would you pass a law? Honestly, what it would do, it would keep a daughter or a husband from being taken advantage of.
Chapter 31. This chapter tells of the destruction of the Midianites and the spoil taken by Israel. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward shall thou be gathered unto thy people.
So you have to understand what this is all about. The Midianites, that's who the Israelites started intermingling with in marriage and started turning to their idols and turning away from God. And because of this, God said, all right, I want you to deal with the Midianites. You punish them, then it'll be time for you to die.
And Moses spoke unto the people, saying, arm some of yourselves unto the war, and let them go against the Midianites and avenge the Lord of Midian.
Now I want you to think about this. Moses was 120 years old when he died.
Yeah, wow.
So here's a man over 100 years old that, all right, let's go to war. All right, you guys get ready. We're going to war. We're going to take care of this problem. They tried to intermingle with us to turn us away from God. Now we're going to deal with it by the instruction of God. And because of Moab's ungodly influence over Israel, God ordered the destruction of the Midianites. If you remember, Balaam, whom God would not let curse, is the one who gave counsel on how to bring about the destruction of Israel through intermarriages. Difference in the race was not the purpose for disallowing the marriage. The purpose was there not to follow other gods. If they marry these women, they'll follow their God. Look at what Solomon did. Yet Solomon didn't go back and read all this, evidently, you understand? And so the purpose for this instruction was to keep Israel true to God. And you can see this in Deuteronomy chapter 7, 1 through 4, 1 Kings 11, 1 through 3. We must never become yoked to someone who does not serve our God. You shouldn't do it in marriage, and you shouldn't do it in business relationships. Don't enter into business with someone who doesn't follow God, because they'll follow ungodly practices, and it will violate your conscience. Or you'll just turn away and get caught up in those things, especially when you realize it's making money for you. You with me?
Yeah.
Don't violate your conscience. You stay with people that serve the same God you do. Just because they say, well, I'm a Christian, doesn't mean they serve the God I serve. Most of them serve a fabricated God, not a true God. You with me?
Verse 4. Of every tribe, 1,000 throughout all the tribes of Israel shall you send to war, to the war. So there were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war.
So here's the instruction Moses, all right, take 1,000 troops out of each of the 12 tribes, so you're going to go against these Midianites with an army of 12,000 people. Engage them in battle. You mount the offense against them.
And Moses sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe, them and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, to the war with the holy instruments and the trumpet to blow in his hand.
Now, just to show you that this is orchestrated by God, not only did Moses send the troops against the Midianites, but he sent the high priest, the son of the high priest, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, to carry the holy articles, and I think this is referring to the Ark of the Covenant. You carry that into battle, and the trumpet, which was used in directing the troops. In other words, Phinehas will be responsible for bringing the presence of God in among the troops. And he'll be the one that blows the trumpet. You see, here again you go back to laws that were given earlier when they went into battle. The trumpets were to be blown, the silver trumpets. What's that doing? That's notifying God, here we are, here we go. I thank you that you've gone out before us.
And they warred against the Midianites as the Lord commanded Moses, and they slew all the males, and they slew the kings of Midian, beside the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi, and Rechem, and Zur, and Hur, and Reba, 5 kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword.
So at the command of the Lord, they fought against the Midianites. They defeated them. They killed all the males, including the 5 kings of Midian and Balaam. Balaam got the death penalty for turning them away from God. You understand?
And the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives and their little ones, and took the spoil of all their cattle and all their flocks and all their goods. And they burnt all their cities wherein they dwelt, and all their goodly castles with fire. And they took all the spoil and all the prey, both of men and of beasts.
So after defeating this Midianite army, they take the women, the children, the cattle, the flocks, everything of value. They burned all the cities and forts where they lived and took all the spoil. This is including people and animals. Well, if you just look at that superficially, it sounds okay. But as we'll find out, it's not going to be okay with Moses.
And they brought the captives and the prey and the spoil unto Moses and Eleazar the priest, and unto the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the camp at the plains of Moab, which are by Jordan near Jericho.
So they return from the battle. They bring all this people and flocks and all this stuff. And Moses and Eleazar goes out to meet the people. and outside the camp, okay?
And Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands and the captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said unto them, Have you saved all the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam, to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord.
So when Moses saw these Midianite women, he became very angry with the leaders of the army. And he asked why they'd kept these women alive. Now, listen to this to let you know that I'm not fabricating some things. These women, through the counsel of Balaam, had caused the Israelites to sin against the Lord at Beor. So Balaam is the one who gave the counsel on how to bring about the fall of Israel. Consequently, the Lord sent a plague among them. He destroyed 24,000. And that's talking about the Israelites through Balaam's counsel and them following the enticement, I'll say it that way, and started intermarrying, and God passed judgment on Israel, and 24,000 Israelites fell as a result of that.
Now, therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman that hath known a man by lying with him. But all the women children that have not known a man by lying with him, keep alive for yourselves.
Now, you know, some people say, well, this is so cruel. God's smarter than you are. Mm-hmm. So he instructs these military leaders, like, kill all the males. You can't reproduce without males. If you want to get rid of the problem, then you've got to go to the root of the problem and eradicate it. And that's exactly what's going on here. Then he said, also, you kill all the women who's engaged in sexual relations with men. You don't have to kill the virgins. Okay? They're still pure.
And do you abide without the camp 7 days? Whosoever hath killed any person and whosoever hath touched any slain, purify both yourselves and your captives on the third day and on the seventh day, and purify all your raiment and all that is made of skins and all work of goat's hair and all things made of wood.
So every soldier who had killed anyone or touched a dead body was to stay outside the camp for 7 days. On the third day and the seventh days, they were to cleanse themselves and the captives. They were also to wash their clothing, everything made from leather, goat hair, and wood. In other words, you get clean before you come in to camp. And yet, God is the one who orchestrated this battle. You understand? The proverb says, to everything there's a season. There's a time for war. When is that? When God is wanting to execute judgment against that nation. You see it all the way through the Old Testament. Now, I thank God for Jesus Christ and what he's done, but there's still a time for war. When what's going on right now in Israel, that's a time for war, because now you've come against the people of God.
Right.
And so there's a time that you rise up. You're trying to take the territory that God gave us. No, you can't have it. You're trying to harass us. That's not going to happen. And I'm not a warmonger, but by the same token, I don't run from it. I prefer peace. I've said it like the psalmist, I'm for peace. When I speak, they're for war. And I'm going to tell you right now, you can't be passive. You have to take a stand. And if someone crosses that line, then you do not back down. You take your stand with God and you don't back down. And you do what God says, whether they like it or whether they don't. You with me? And people, you know, they don't understand how God operates. They don't know God. God is fair, God is just, and God is righteous, and I'll promise you when God executes judgment, it will be in righteousness. And it'll be with mercy.
And Eleazar the priest said unto the men of war which went to the battle, This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord commanded Moses. Only the gold and the silver, the brass, the iron, the tin, and the lead, everything that may abide the fire, ye shall make it go through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of separation, and all that abideth not the fire ye shall make go through the water. And ye shall wash your clothes on the seventh day, and ye shall be clean, and afterward ye shall come into the camp.
All right, we're going to stop there and take the break because there's some things I want to say concerning this particular area here.